Hello, you have downloaded and are listening to the Celtic Underground podcast, a football fans podcast, and the people behind CelticUnderground.net, just about to finish up our 13th season. Yes, we are the world's longest running football fans podcast. And this week, Celtic have completed a historic Holy Trinity of trebles. And so I decided to get Anthony Murray in out of cold storage from Central Europe to discuss the game against Hearts, the achievement of the treble, and of course the news that broke within an hour of the final whistle that Neil Lennon had been appointed as permanent manager of Celtic, and the universal at best apathy that seemed to have been met with by the supporters. So this is me, Harry Brady, chatting with him, Anthony Murray. I'm joined now by, and I was actually looking, I think it may be 12 months or maybe even more since you were last on, Anthony Murray. How are you doing?
Fine, great, good, yeah, superb.
So for the people who don't know you at all, this is going to be like one of these radio commentaries saying the team's playing from left to right. You've got a beard.
I have. These cold Central European winters inspire such beard growth. Also with age.
You were just going a bit hipstery, and I was going to tell you were on the wrong podcast.
It is part of my plan, actually, to ruin things that are hipstery. Like, in my school, I was tempted to go and, you know, blow a couple of hundred quid on a pair of these disgusting Yeezy shoes, just so that the children that are walking around the school with them are like, oh, he's ruined them. You know, if Mr. Murray's wearing these, they can't be cool anymore. Yeah. I'm tempted to blow the money just to do that. And I guess, yeah, the beard's an attack on that as well.
So I can't remember. Are you part of the European Union? Were you?
Yes. Slovakia recently voted in a liberal woman. So it's all quite progressive and happy. And the fascists are getting swept aside for the time being.
I was going to say, were you part of the trend of some of those countries that have swept aside their fascist voting this? Not Britain, obviously.
I got a proxy vote in Scotland. So for the first time ever, my local vote went SNP, I think. So there you go.
Oh, your dad will be pleased.
Well, he did the vote. Even if I wanted to vote for someone else, he's going to vote what he wants. So the way he is.
So we've got only two topics of conversation on the podcast, and got to be really careful because one of the topics is such an incredible event, yet we've almost taken it for granted. And the second one is something that we're probably going to talk negatively about, and it's possibly wrong to be so negative on a podcast that immediately follows such an amazing event. So we're going to be talking about the cup final and obviously the treble, and the appointment of Neil Lennon as manager. So we'll talk about the cup final first to stay on the positives. So did you get to see it all?
Yeah.
I should have checked that before I asked you to go on the podcast, shouldn't
I? Yeah. I pay for the legitimate Celtic TV these days, so I have access to all the domestic games,
which also
helps because recently Sky wiped out my usage of my dad's Sky Go when they realised that two of us were watching the Huns game on Sky at the same time on different sides of Europe. So yeah, I've lost that privilege. So fortunately, I pay for the Celtic TV, so I got to enjoy it with Tom Boyd shouting penalty every time the ball goes in the opposition half. You know.
Okay, so we'll start from the very beginning. The team. So what did you make of the team? Do you remember the team?
Off the top of my head, I was really pleased that Johnston got the start. I just think he's a really exciting player. I'm kind of not the only person in the world that's kind of lost faith in Sinclair, so I was happy to see Johnston getting down the left. I think that's, you know, the future. Forrest, obviously player of the year, down the right. Johnston down the left. Obviously see McGregor in the team, and Edwards, a go-to guy for a big-time goal these days. Mm-hmm. Strange player, Edward. I was explaining this to someone the other day. in the same 10 minutes, he could look like Amido Baldi and Henrik Larsson. And it really, he does swing between the two. And there's times you're like, what's he doing? But he's done it enough that I now have total faith in him.
Do you know what I think?
The goal's coming.
One for the kids, see, a reference for the kids. I'm now starting to feel old with somebody that doesn't seem that long ago. Now I have to realise some of the people listening to this won't have ever seen him. There's something about the Viduka in him, and the Viduka could be missing for 20 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes in a game, but was equally capable of picking the ball up, running the length of the park and putting the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, I was a big, big Viduka fan. Yeah, I was a really big Viduka fan, actually. And yeah, there's that strength and that touch that occasionally doesn't happen, but then when it does happen, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
you know, it's really, really brilliant. And I'll jump ahead to the winning goal. What a goal!
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's so often, obviously, when you're playing a video game or whatever, a through one on one should be a goal.
Yeah,
you know, it should be a goal. The striker should finish that, but so often that's not the case. You know, a keeper makes a save, a striker tries to do something too clever. Whatever. So for him to just sweep through and make that look so easy was brilliant. You know, it was a proper me jumping around my flat in a silent suburb of Bratislava, and neighbours probably thinking, oh, something was going on down there. You know, it was so exciting. It was really satisfying.
To jump ahead to that goal, the thing about it is everything about his whole body shape is he's just about to try and slot it to the keeper's left. I mean, everything about the way his whole, the way he frames up, the way he slightly dips his shoulder, the way he sort of opens his body out, he's just going to hit it along the ground to the keeper's left. So the keeper starts to move to his left.
Yeah.
And he wraps his foot and curls his foot to hit it off the ground to the keeper's right. That's what makes it such a good take and such a great goal.
It was a brilliant goal.
And your point about Mikey Johnson, I said this after the Hearts League game. Now, I know it wasn't as important as the cup final. What I liked about Mikey Johnson, and I'm not saying he's the same type of player, there was something Maloney-esque in his footwork in the game at Celtic Park, in that they were so quick that when he got into the box, you could see defenders were frightened to tackle him because they were going to give a foul. They were sort of about to tackle him and pull him out of the challenge because his feet were so quick. That's what I like about him.
He's definitely got the sort of Maloney fast feet, but I think potentially, I think over that sort of 20 metres, he looks a little bit faster than Maloney. I thought it was within 10 metres, Maloney was brilliant. But I think Mikey looks a little bit quicker over a little bit further distance. Which obviously would be a good thing. And that second goal he scored the other day when he did the 1-2, you know, stepped up onto space. And it was a weird one because it was one of those ones where it didn't look like he caught it that well. Mm-hmm. But it then pinged in off the post and then the far side of there. It looked like a beautiful goal by the end of it, which was odd. But his first goal was brilliant as well.
So, I suppose the main things were in terms of Hayes at left back, so no Kieran Tierney, which again, he's, the thing that I can't help but thinking is Tierney's played so little football since the winter break. Why didn't we just send him for the operation at Christmas?
Yeah, weeks ago. Yeah.
And Rogic playing up front, playing in the number 10 role when he's been anonymous pretty much most of this season because he's been injured into the team for 3-4 games when I think he's the type of player who needs a run of games to be sharp, back out the team injured. So those two were the two selections that stood out for me. And what do you make of Kanamoko Dembele making the bench?
Again, the previous week I was really pleased to see him. The whispers, as it is this time of year, oh, let's get Paddy Roberts back. It's like, well, now we've got potentially Shved and Karamoko Dembele, who we may as well put our faith in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the exact same, you know, the left footer down the right, they're the guys to get excited about. So I would, as much as I liked Paddy Roberts, let's, you know, that time has been and gone. and let's get excited about Karim Okundebele. He is tiny. He is hilariously small. But his touch is wonderful, and he's, you know, it looks like he's full of confidence. It's funny because I watch all the as many of the highlights of the youth teams as you can see on the Celtic TV, and it's not like he's scoring hat tricks every week or anything. You know, it's like, I remember back in the day watching McGeady play for the youth teams, mm-hmm. and McGeady was really tearing it up. You know, it was impossible not to get him called up to the first team because his form at that level, and the same with Craig Beattie. You'd have thought Craig Beattie was going to be a great, great player by his form in the under-18s and the under-21s. So it's not like Karim Okudebele's been that good, mm-hmm. but he's clearly been good enough to get the nod. But then ultimately, I think there's probably that slight fear, you know, the Islam Feroz situation, right? We need to give him game time to win his trust and win his faith that he's going to be a Celtic player.
Of course,
or else he might look elsewhere.
If you've got a small player, we could also pump him full of steroids and hormones to make him bigger, because you're allowed to do that.
That works for Barcelona, doesn't it?
Works for Barcelona, right? So, did you... I mean, I was going to then say, what do you think of the Hearts team? But I have no idea whether that was a full-time Hearts team or not, because I don't pay attention to the rest of Scottish football, I'll be brutally honest.
The only two thoughts I had were, when I saw that they'd played their 16-year-old at left back, I thought, oh damn, that was our license to play our 16-year-old at right wing. You know, we should have, you know, like the week before, but we didn't. No, that lad did quite well. And then also the absence of that, is it Ik Pietsu?
Yeah.
You know, he's obviously a good big player who pushes guys around and stuff. So him not being there, I was more than happy with that. Because that meant he played that camp guy that used to play for St Johnston. Stephen McLean?
McLean, oh, yeah.
Sort of minces around the park like John Inman. and then kicks people. He's a strange player. Really strange player. But absolute filth.
Yeah. So, game kicks off. First half. Let's just cut to the chase. First half, did anything happen of note in the first half?
To think about, not that I can remember.
I've
got nothing.
You know, we were talking about it at half time, saying, you know, obviously we're only interested in Celtic, but this thing would have been a cup final, so there's more neutrals than normal watch a cup final. How utterly mind-numbingly boring that first half must have been from the neutrals watching it. Because it was just crap.
Yeah, it wasn't good. I remember that the previous year I was invited to a barbecue. It was full of sort of lots of well-to-do English expats. And, you know, Celtic were 2-0 up at half-time against Motherwell.
Yeah.
And there was this one Millwall fan who was just doing that, oh, God, Scottish football, oh... You know, really mm-hmm. condescending bullshit. And in that game, Cal McGregor smacked in a 20-yard half volley that no keeper on earth would have stopped.
That's right, yeah.
And then Cham scored a lovely goal as well. And I remember I'd get very angry. You know, like nearly letting go of this guy, you know. Certainly we had a better first half last year than we did this year, because I can't remember anything that happened in the first half this year.
No, neither can I. So the only thing of note for me was after about 15-20 minutes, and I put this on Twitter, and one or two people, you know, a few people were agreeing, and one or two people were sort of missing the point of what was made. I found myself getting more and more and more angry as the game went on, at the tactics of Craig Levein and of Willie Collum. And my anger was that the tactics of Craig Levein were based upon the way that football is refereed in Scotland. And a couple of people saying, oh, Levein's not going to sit there and think, ah, it's Willie Collum and he does this. And I don't mean that. It is my continual rant that I see games every week and you watch a Champions League game or something like that, and you'll see something happen, and the commentators will say, and that'll be a yellow. and it is a yellow, and the player doesn't dispute that it's a yellow because it's a yellow card. And every single week in Scottish football, I'll see a foul given for it. They don't not give fouls, but they don't give the yellow. They don't just start. You know, the example I always give was when we get beat by Kilmarnock last season at Rugby Park under Brendan Rodgers, and Kurt Broadfoot. It was about six or seven times cut, Celtic players cutting through, and Kurt Broadfoot just grabbed a jersey and pulled them down.
Yeah.
And he didn't get booked until like the 85th minute for doing it. Now, we didn't play well that day against Kilmarnock, but if Kurt Broadfoot had been booked for doing that in the 25th minute, it would have changed the whole course of the game, because he would no longer have been able to just stop us playing by fouling us.
Yeah.
And Scottish refs give fouls for fouls, but they don't give yellows. And then they don't follow that up with reds for things that would be yellows and reds in other leagues. And that then allows, if you're a manager like Craig Levein, you cannot outplay Celtic, right? You don't have the players to outplay Celtic. So you've got to go to your capabilities. And that then means that one of your things is to give fouls, niggly fouls. Every time we have more than two or three passes in a play, you give a niggly foul. And the benefit of that is it just stops us ever getting any momentum, because we're not in our flow, because you're always fouling us. And two, it then means that we're... And also, if you then don't allow us to take quick free kicks, and when you make the foul, you stand in the way, it then means that we are permanently moving forward from a set piece position, which is something you can train for all week. You can train for setting up to defend a set, or to stop us playing at a set piece. And so if you then are continually committing foul after foul after foul after foul, we don't get into a rhythm, and you can continually move back into your perfect shape for defending a set piece. And I turned to my nephew after about 15 minutes and I said, you know, they're committing all these niggly fouls and they're going to get away with it, and it'll be the 60th or the 65th minute before Willie Collin brings out his yellow card. And the first Hearts player booked was their keeper on the 60th minute, when he was standing on the penalty spot to stop us taking the penalty. And the first Hearts player booked for a foul was on the 65th minute. And I may sound anal, but it's only because I'd made a comment about it will be the 60th, yeah. Or 60th, because that's the way Scottish refs are. Well, it's a big game. I'm not going to book him. You know, the game's now two-thirds of the way in. I can't keep letting those fouls go, so it's now time for a booking. And then they just will randomly, this is the thing that bugs me about it, they then just randomly book a guy. It's not the guy who's committed the seventh foul, it's just the next guy to commit the foul at the 65th minute, he's the guy who gets booked. And my thoughts that that's how Hearts were setting up to play were confirmed when Hearts kicked off for the second half. And they just kicked the ball into touch. They deliberately, it was intent. They just booted the ball down the park and kicked it in for a throw-in, because that allowed them to go down the park and set up, down our end of the pitch, set up a set piece.
I think this season, more than any, and this is me trying to distance myself from Tommy Boyd's Celtic TV paranoia, but there has been games where, you know, the opposing team, whoever it may be, have kicked us, you know, five, six, seven, eight times, and then Scott Brown gets a yellow card.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like it's happened a lot this season, where they get away with it for a while, and then the first yellow card gets dished out our way, and then the yellow cards start flowing.
Yeah.
But it's all that has happened quite a bit this season. I think the one game I've watched all season, just to provide some balance, I think I watched one of the Aberdeen games against Rangers, and I was actually, obviously, in that situation, you're watching it from a different perspective. Yeah. And Aberdeen, it was a masterclass in kicking people, but spreading the guilt.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And in that situation, I was loving every minute of it, because I was wanting Aberdeen to win the match. So there is a wisdom to it. You know, you can understand why they do it. But yeah, the refs will usually... we've seen this season, the refs have not helped us out in that situation. But they're never going to. We shouldn't expect them to, I guess.
No, and it's a couple of things. Your point about the Aberdeen Rangers game, because that's how these teams play. They just go and I'm more of a cock up the conspiracy type person. I mean, I do think there's natural biases which come into play when people are doing stuff. But I watched the first leg, a bit of the first leg of the St Mirren Dundee United playoff game. Right. I can't remember now which team it was. One of them was attacking, and the ball broke up, and so there's a breakaway at the park. So say it was St Mirren breakaway. And the Dundee United defender at the halfway line just runs across and takes out the St Mirren player. I think it was that was he. And the referee just waves play on. And you think, not only is that a foul, it's a yellow card because he has just run. I mean, he didn't take him out in terms of, he's, you know, a sliding tackle. He just, like, body checked him. Yeah. Just ran over and body checked him because the guy was through if he didn't do that. And the referee just, and I thought, there's the problem with Scottish football. My mates actually get a theory that part of the problem is they've been refereeing at junior football, you know, they come through the junior.
Yeah, yeah.
So by the time they get, and then the third and second tier of Scottish football, where things are a bit more agricultural. So by the time they get to the top flight, there's a bit of a, I've seen worse than that,
yeah,
type mentality. And that's part of the problem. So, anyway, I was finding myself getting more and more annoyed at Willie Collum just letting all these things go and Craig Levein's. It's part of the, Craig Levein being lauded in Scottish football because he makes his teams hard to beat is part of the reason why Scottish football language is where it is and why teams in Scotland are not playing European football other than Celtic. Because a coach like that should be run out of town. A guy who, that's the way he plays his teams. But anyway, second half kicks off. Hearts score. What do you think of the Hearts score?
I wasn't happy about it because I've got issues with certainly one of the players that was involved with it, which was Hayes. I don't understand Hayes. I understand he's filling in as Tierney, but the resurrection of his Celtic career in general, I'm not really understanding it. I always argued with pals. I've got pals, a big Aberdeen fan. And I always argued that Neil McGinn was a better player than Johnny Hayes. And my mate is a contrary arsehole, and he'd try and wind me up and tell me that Hayes was the better player. And not that I'm suggesting we should ever have bought Neil McGinn back. That's not the point I'm making. My point is I just thought McGinn was better than Hayes. And we've bought Hayes. He's done absolutely nothing, let's be honest.
Yeah.
In 2.5 years at Celtic, he's done absolutely
it's
nothing.
Not good enough for Celtic. It's not his fault.
It's not good enough. But the fact that he had this renaissance at the end of his career that coincided with Lennon's return, and I've likened this to some pals, that it reminded me of when I played uni football, and occasionally, you know, the first team captain or the second team captain would change, you know, within the football club.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden some guy would be playing wide left for the first or the second, and everyone would be like, who's that guy? He's like, oh, he lives with Dougie, the first team captain. It's like, he's not even a football club guy. It's just like his flatmate. And all of a sudden he's playing for the Union Football Club, you know. And it was like, where's he come from? And that's basically Johnny Hayes' Celtic career. I don't know if he's one of Lennon's booze buddies or what, but I don't know how he becomes involved again. I don't know how we don't have a young left back, younger than Tierney, someone who's playing for the under-21s, who's playing for the reserves. Why is Hayes there? So, with that prejudice in mind, yes, I saw some pundits were blaming Ayer for not getting his dive in quick enough. But if you watch that replay from any angle, it's like, why is Johnny Hayes falling on his back? Johnny Hayes just this, he just falls. He reaches out and just falls on his back.
That was a really good illustration for the listeners you did there.
I know. I put a lot of energy into that. But watch it again with it in mind. It's like, why is he doing that? Why is he not stepping into the challenge? Mm-hmm. Why is he not walking towards the ball? I understand if a guy's getting a big strike off, you might... I don't know why you do that. I try and make myself as big as possible. But he just does this weird stretchy fall thing, which then, you know, the ball squirts out. Ayer doesn't get there quick enough. And, you know, the guy buries it. Well done. So that was my main issue. I mean, everyone can make a chance. You could blame anyone at any point in a move.
Yeah.
But that was the one that I thought was preventable. You know, if they move the ball in from the left, blah, 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 nobody's faster than the ball, so you can't, a ball can get passed around you.
I mean, the only thing I thought our whole defence was sort of, our defence and defence at midfield is, everybody was like one position too far to the right. When you watch it from behind the goal, they're all one step over further than they should be. And as a consequence, if they're not, Hayes is one man over, Ayer's one man over, Smolovic is one man over. You know, the Brown and McGregor, you also see them sort of coming into shot, and you think, we were all as a whole team, one person too far to the right. So you're right. I think you could probably watch that. You could watch that go back probably four times and blame different people. Do you know the thing I can remember at the time? And I'm at the other end of the ground, so it's sometimes difficult at the opposite end of the ground to get the depth of field to know exactly how close somebody in. I can remember shouting, "Oh, Forrest!"
Yeah.
As the guy cuts inside, because I felt Forrest could have done slightly better to block the run of the guys he's cutting in. I've watched it since, and I don't think he was as much of as I shouted. I mean, I didn't know it was going to be a goal. But yeah, I thought the biggest thing was the whole team. My concern at that point was we hadn't looked like scoring.
Yeah.
Against a team whose tactics were to stop us playing. So Hearts scoring first, my big concern was that's a disaster.
Yeah.
Because they're already sitting deep and stopping us from playing. And now they've got a goal to defend. They'll just do that tenfold with no requirement to go. I mean, they weren't really doing anything in the second half anyway, but even less requirement to go up the park.
When Rogic is playing as poorly as he is, mm-hmm. you really start missing Armstrong and Christie.
Yeah.
You know, you really start noticing, all right, who's going to make that run? Who's going to make that third man run?
Yeah.
I think it's a funny a reflection on the season. It's funny how it panned out. You know, for me, you know, games per minutes per goals, Christie could have been player of the year.
Yeah.
Because when we were at our best, it was the 6 weeks that Christie got involved and was absolutely brilliant. And hopefully, you know, foundations upon which a great Celtic career can be built.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love Christie. Obviously Armstrong did that before. And in a game that stodgy, where Rogic isn't doing the genius thing on the edge of the box to make something happen, you really start noticing, right, where is this going to come from?
Yeah.
And I think you have to applaud, you have to put your hands up and applaud the players that were there. You know, we sing, that's why we are champions. That is why we're champions. We always seem to find a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is awesome how they do it, even when we're not seemingly going to do it. And maybe for 5 minutes. It wasn't long after the goal, was it?
No, it wasn't. Within 5 minutes, yeah.
And much like the Aberdeen game 2 years ago, remember Johnny Hayes scored and then Aberdeen didn't touch the ball and then Armstrong scored. You know, so it was much like that. You have to applaud the resilience or the bounce back. It is brilliant what we do. It was just a penalty, but we did get straight back in it, which is awesome.
So what do you think of the penalty? Was it a penalty?
Yeah, I think it was. I didn't see any angle that was the conclusive, he definitely caught him, but I also didn't see an angle that was the conclusive, he didn't catch him. So from what I saw, it looked pretty natural that either the defender or the keeper swept him.
See your point about watching some games where players commit fouls and then Scott Brown gets booked. So I heard, you know, coming away from the game, Radio Scotland, you know, somebody said it was a soft penalty, but a penalty, right? I can remember being at the Arsenal's Emirates Arena and being at Old Trafford when teams got penalties against us when it was clearly a dive. You know, there was no connection between Boric and the player. And I can remember leaving that and being told, well, he may have dived, but when the goalkeeper comes out in such a rash fashion, you're making it difficult, you're asking for it. Well, firstly, the keeper came out in the rash fashion that was asking for it. Secondly, it looks to me, from the bits I've seen, he takes away, they're looking at the front leg and saying, oh, I'm not sure if he did make connection. The keeper takes away his standing leg.
Yeah.
And he goes down, it's a penalty.
And that's the brilliance of Edouard that I'm talking about, that to have that presence of mind to push it away with his left foot, you know, that's really naturally brilliant. You know, a million other strikers have bombed through on a goalkeeper before, but it's those little bits of genius that make him different from other players. But he did, it's quite blatantly a touch away with his left foot, which is, you know, what they, you know, if, I remember watching a Pelé video when I was a little kid, and there was a sort of tutorial bit that he'd do in it, you know, trying to teach you how to ride a tackle, how to win a free kick, and it was like, all right, if you're dribbling past the guy on your right, move the ball onto your left. You know, it's obviously fundamentals, but not everyone does it.
Yeah,
certainly not everyone in Scotland does it. So it was a brilliant moment by Edouard, and the fact that he gets up. I loved his post match interview on the BBC. Were you nervous? He's just like, oh, I'm never nervous when I'm hitting a penalty. I just love that. I think his heads are slightly the clouds. You know, he's a kind of odd character. I can't really get a read on him, but I love him to bits.
So he then puts the penalty away. Again, they were talking on the radio on the way home that the keeper should have saved it. I've watched it again. Nah, I think he just happens to be in the vicinity. His hands are in the vicinity of the ball. But, you know, so it's a penalty. And then once we scored, I don't know about you, I just felt we were then going to go on and win the game. Because Hearts looked nice. The other downside of the way Hearts have been playing the first half of just stopping us playing, that uses a lot of energy. And they started to look knackered.
My one concern when it dragged on a little bit was I think it cut to our bench. And it was that kind of horrible realisation. It was like, all right, I don't think he's going to have the guts to put on Dembele.
Mm-hmm.
So we can chalk him off. And then everyone else was there was like, oh, I'd rather just keep the guy that's on. You know?
Yeah.
At that point. It's like, I, even though obviously Sinclair came on and we won the match, I wasn't thinking I'll get Johnston off or get Forrest off.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have made that change. I'd have just said, I'd have maybe had a word with Johnston and say, you know, try and get in this game. Unless he was knackered.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I think it was my brother said to me, it was that substitution of, I'm not quite sure what to do, but I should probably just make a change, so I'll just take the youngest guy off.
Yeah.
It was one of those types of, there was no glaring shouting, it's got to be Johnston that comes off type thing. So, and then we've talked about the winning goal.
Yeah.
So, only because we've got to spend the rest of this podcast talking about the manager as well. Alice does made a point on the BBC actually that I think had some validity where he said that he felt a treble was more of an achievement than a Celtic win 10 in a row. What do you think? In terms of two teams have already won 9 in a row, but nobody's ever got a treble, close to a treble.
But then nobody's ever done 10 in a row, so I don't think 10 in a row will trump everyone, surely.
Yeah, but I did think it's there's some validity of two teams have nearly got to 10 in a row and the two teams have done 9 in a row, but nobody's been offered one that game, they don't want a treble.
It is brilliant. And even if I mean, maybe it's just... I just like the fact that we've won 3 Scottish Cups in a row. Do you mean that's awesome?
Yeah.
You know? When you think back to, I don't know, 1995, when we're winning a cup.
Yeah.
And it's party time because we've won a cup. I don't know, I quite like the Scottish Cup. I quite like the memories of the sunny day, although it was chucking it down yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, Hampden on a sunny day, you know, those memories of 88 and stuff are burnt in our memories. So I like the Scottish Cup, and I like when we win it. So even that, just 3 Scottish Cups in a row is brilliant. But yeah, the fact that it's 3 of 3 is just bonkers, really, when you think about it.
And again, see, do you know one of the aspects I love about the treble as well is those Huns who are trying to say that our 9 in a row doesn't count because they weren't there for some of it. They were there for every one of the seasons where we won a treble.
I saw someone tweeted a funny thing. It was, you know, it was that undermining that, all right, you're, while we were out the league, your trophies don't count. And it, someone had posted the stats. It was, all right, so while you're out the league, Celtic won, I don't know, what, 4 of 8 or, you know, whatever. Uh-huh. Since they came back, 9 out of 9, boom. Full marks. It's pretty satisfied, I guess.
So, as I walked in the door on Saturday night, I got a text. Neil Lennon has been appointed full-time manager.
Yeah. I immediately resorted. As a young man that I am, I communicate largely with GIFs these days.
Uh-huh.
You know, why use words when you can...
When you can draw
find some animation of Bugs Bunny making a silly face or something, you know? And I immediately was there. You know, the sort of the party poppers that you blow?
Uh-huh.
You know, that sort of, but a sort of sarcastic one, you know, one sort of, yay, you know, yeah. Sort of ruined the party. It hit me pretty negatively when I got that message. It was pretty, couldn't let us celebrate the treble for a little bit longer. You gave us this news that I'm not convinced is great.
Yeah, and I'm loath to go into too much criticism of Neil Lennon himself, right, as a manager, because Neil Lennon is now the Celtic manager, and he will be the Celtic manager until there's a reason for him not to be the Celtic manager, right? So since I want Celtic to be successful and win 10 in a row, as a consequence, I want Neil Lennon to be successful. And I want Neil Lennon to be the Celtic... I don't want Neil Lennon to be the Celtic manager, but since he now is the Celtic manager, by default, I need Neil Lennon to be Celtic manager for the next 4 or 5 years, right? Because I want Celtic to be successful domestically and in Europe. So that means I need Neil Lennon to be the manager. But without sounding over-dramatic, Saturday night was the most down I have ever felt after Celtic won a trophy. Ever. Full stop. No debate.
Yeah. And there's little red flags, because, you know, that justify or explain this feeling. One of them was, I joked to my friends, you know, it's like, well, as long as he gets rid of Lustig, you know, I'm on board. First thing he says is, I want Lustig to stay. It's like, oh, you're joking. Do you know what I mean? You couldn't have said anything worse.
Well, and you know what? I'm going to defend Lustig here, right? I would argue, getting back to your point about we've run Tierney into the ground because there was no backup for Tierney, right? I would argue, domestically, I mean, it would be better to have a young player coming through, right? So you don't want, and we'll get onto that maybe in a minute, but I would argue Lustig, for a large chunk of domestic games, would be good enough to play to be our second choice right back next season.
No, I'd disagreed with you 12 months ago. So add 12 months to that disagreement, and I think my cynicism from last year has been justified by his trademark move. And I was explaining this to someone last week that, you know, if you say Henrik Larsson, you think Larsson rising at the back post to score a header.
Yeah.
you say Nakamura, you see him sweeping in a free kick from 25 metres into the top corner. You say Lustig to me, I see him pulling up with a hamstring in a game where he realises he's getting his arse torn and he wants off. That's his trademark. That's his legacy to me now at this point, because it's happened too much. I don't think in my lifetime, my adult lifetime, watching a Celtic player, I've been as disappointed with a prolonged mediocrity of performance than Lustig 2016 to 18-19. Jeez, oh. I said at the time, when he scored at Ibrox, he should have run off and never come back. And then his legacy was secure. All he's done is flush that down the toilet. And one diving header at Pittodrie 2 weeks ago does not brush that away.
And a header that sets up the winner in the treble trim and winning cup final.
Did you see his kind of weird celebration as he did it? He sort of head in hands like, oh, what have I done? It's very odd. I don't know what he was up to. But I mean, the Celtic fans love him, and you know, far be it from me to disagree with them.
Right, so we're going to get on to the manager, right? So before we start, as I say, a couple of cards on the table being, I wasn't at first when Lennon left. I wasn't disappointed when Lennon left last time, right? And I think we can do better than Neil Lennon. But he's a Celtic manager. I want him to be a success, so that's the life. I'm going to be more criticism for the weird statements Peter Lawwell's made since. However, in defence of Neil Lennon, right?
Right. That's your job.
Right. I'm going to... Do you know, last... I did it in defence of Neil Lennon last week to try and have a counter conversation to it. And a guy put a comment on YouTube criticising me for having a hard... His exact quote was something about... I've just said his exact quote and then said something about... But you get my point. Harry Brady's hard on for Neil Lennon. He's not very good. All I did was... We spent a whole podcast talking about the benefits of having a director of football with Mark Cooper. And I then said, right, okay, here's the reasons why they might look at Neil Lennon. So I'm going to ask you why I'm putting the Celtic managers in this order, right?
Right.
Martin O'Neill, Neil Lennon, Jock Stein, Brendan Rodgers, Gordon Strachan, Ronnie Dyler. Why have I put the Celtic managers in that order? Sorry, Gordon Strachan, Bill McNeil, Ronnie Dyler. Why have I put the Celtic managers in that order?
I've no idea. You've put me on the spot here. No idea. Tell me.
Their win percentage.
Oh, it's as simple as that, right. So Lennon second?
Second.
Right.
In a this manager who's had more than 100 games.
This goes back to some research that I did, because I've gone back to look, because I was trying to work out when was the... I like, you know, when Lennon came in, the whole, what was it, let's get the Thunder back.
Yeah, bring back the Thunder, yeah.
Is that right? Bring back the Thunder, right. So someone will attack me on Twitter for misquoting that. I'm not on Twitter, so good luck. but someone will say I'm an arsehole.
And you'll never know. If a tree falls in the forest,
they'll be right. And I was trying to work out, because obviously, first season, I think I went to every home game. It was when I still lived in Glasgow. But then we lost the league. Mm-hmm. So that was frustrating. But we won the cup. And as we've established, I like winning the Scottish Cup. Second season, brilliant, zombie implosion, jelly and ice cream, 3-0, last ever Old Firm game. Happy with that. Okay. Is it just the next year is the Barcelona season?
Yep.
Right. Probably the best Celtic kit in my lifetime. I like that one. When they started wearing the white socks. Remember at the start of the season, they wore the black socks.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started on the new kit. Yikes, horrible. Anyway, and then there's the next season, which will be Lennon's last.
Mm-hmm.
And I think folk, I say folk forget, I forgot how many good games we won. Do you know what I mean? We had good runs. We had long winning runs that season, which is why he's on this list.
Yeah.
We won loads of games. We forget because we bought like Pukki and Baldy, and you know they were basically both, you know, failures.
Mm-hmm.
Although Pukki is clearly a good player and he's probably worth about 50 million now. But we forget that season was all right up to a point. And there was the game that broke me with regards to supporting Lennon, although there was other factors. The game was the cup game against Aberdeen. We got put out of the cup by Aberdeen. And I looked back to something I wrote at the time. And my fury came from the fact that we'd been on a brilliant run of form without Samaras in the team. And I know you're a Samaras apologist, and I am not. So I'm not wanting an argument about Samaras. But my point is, we were playing well. We were winning.
Mm-hmm.
I think the week before, we'd won at Tynecastle 2-0. Griffiths had been signed. Griffiths had scored. We'd beat Hibs 4-0, I think. You know, we were on a good run of form. And we went in a cup game that he fiddled the team. And we got put out of the Scottish Cup.
Did we draw Pittodrie come back to Celtic Park to replay? Was that...
It could have been. I think that might have been in the Strachan season that we got put out by Aberdeen. No? I might be wrong. But certainly in the league, we were on a good run of wins when we went into that cup game and lost. And that was obviously annoying because it was you know, at that time we're playing against no one. We should be winning trebles at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously we say, oh, it's not easy to win a treble. Tell us that we've just done three in a row. Piece of piss, you know? I jest. You know, we should be winning cups in that situation. And that year we threw away a cup. And I put that down to, you know, poor team selection. Married to that over the 3 years, other shortcomings, which... One of which I think is importantly the failure to give young players a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember wrapping all this up in a tweet. I was on Twitter back then at the time, kind of when Lennon left first time, I kind of put all my thoughts out on one tweet. And I remember reading or hearing Lennon complaining about pseudo intellectuals commenting on football. And I remember thinking, he's talking about me. You know, I'd like to think that. I don't think there's anything pseudo-intellectual about football at all. I think football's a really simple game. I don't think there's anything particularly complex about it whatsoever. I think science can help it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think over-analysing retrospectively does anything, serves any purpose, other than people voicing opinions, right? And that kind of anger that he gets when other intelligent people comment, I have issues with. Because
mm-hmm.
not everyone's an expert. Nobody's an expert. It's just a game. And his views on it aren't... they're not the most advanced version of football. Let's not pretend they are. They're not Pep Guardiola. They're not Klopp.
Mm-hmm.
His philosophy and his tactics are well short of that, well short of the best at this stage. And part of that for me is the failure to progress young players. What he did when he took the job from Mowbray, he threw Forrest in on day one. Okay, so that was give youth a chance. Forrest took his chance. Forrest stayed in the team for the next 7 years. Good. Then basically nobody gets a chance. You could say Tony Watt burned brightly very briefly, but then Tony Watt turns out to be a failure as well. And the irony is the one that he sticks with, and I've mentioned this in podcasts before, I used to go and watch the under-18s and the under-21s back then quite a lot because I had a cousin that played in the same league for a different club. And if you'd looked at that Celtic team, the standouts were McGregor, and to be honest, is it Fraser... Marcus Fraser, who's actually, you know, put together a decent journeyman career.
Yeah.
But in that Celtic under 21 team or under 18 team, he looked like Steven Gerrard as a player. You know, box to box, left, right, everywhere. He looked like an excellent player. Now, from a team that had that Fraser boy who looked very good, that had McGregor absolutely pulling the strings, he picked Filip Twarzyk as the player to get first team football. And he stuck with Twarzyk for a little while. He gave Twarzyk some minutes. Mm-hmm. And then he took Twarzyk to Bolton. So he clearly thought Filip Twarzyk was a footballer, which I would have told you he wasn't watching Celtic's under-18s or under-21s. He was a bit of a coward, nice left foot, maybe fast over 15 metres. Probably in a five-a-side game against Neil Lennon, he looked brilliant. Because by that point, Neil Lennon was 40-plus old man. So he was, you know, he was probably hypnotised by the boy's speed or something. But that's a major flaw for me, that he thought Twarzyk was a footballer. And he really, you know, the Scottish League is littered with young ex-Celtic players, some of which I hope we buy back this summer. I genuinely do. Mm-hmm. That could have made it first time around had they been given the chance. I'm not suggesting we buy Marcus Fraser. I've long since given up on him. But there's others that I would maybe argue on behalf of. And I think, you know, considering our financial restrictions, we need to fall in love with our youth department. We need to give chances to our youth department. And I'm sure you've said it in other podcasts, it's not the, right, here's your two games every season. It has to be the Ajax thing, right, son? You're getting 20 games to become an Ajax player. Good luck. And they do or they don't. You know, they sink or they swim. But you're not going to learn that over two games. Tierney's proven that.
Yeah. And so again, in the let's give Lennon a chance side of the chat, there is the we don't know what remit he's going to be given
yeah.
moving forward. So we don't know whether... The things you don't know, you don't know whether he has slightly changed his attitude to youth, having left Celtic, where, you know, much as we don't, many fans don't think the club spend as much as they could, he had a better budget than he had at subsequently Bolton or Hibs, where he's had to have more of an interaction with youth players. And maybe that's made him change, you know, you don't know whether that's made him change perspective. You don't know whether, as part of the temporary appointment and the, by the way, this is how we're going to, you know, if you get the job full time, these will be some of the requirements. You don't know whether part of it will be, you absolutely are going to have to give youth a chance that you didn't give last time. You're, you know, and Mikey Johnson played, Kanamoko Dembele got on the bench, Ewan Henderson's played under him.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of my issues with Leo Lennon being appointed is actually my disappointment that the club have not grasped the nettle to transform themselves as a club. So that I need a clear indication. What was the point in bringing in Burke and Ware to stop Mikey Johnson, Kanamoko Dembele, and Ewan Henderson getting in the team? Are they so dramatically better than... Were Burke and Ware so dramatically better than those three players to justify getting ahead of them?
I think because all of their careers petered out the way they did, we can forget that, one, the shot in the arm they gave us when they came, particularly Ware and Burke, they did help. They did. Mm-hmm. They're not Missandas. They're not complete non-contributors. They did come in. You know, was it away at St Johnston?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game against Motherwell, I was at home in March when Tony Watt scored, Burke scored a lovely goal. They chipped in with a little bit. And not only did they do that, we really, really needed that. You know, we forget how bad we were at the end. Yeah, you know, when we lost to Ibrox, we had to do something. Now, unless you're going to come out Rodgers or Law was going to come out and say, nope, we've got a fundamental change in policy. From now on, we play youth players. And that is going to be the injection we get. But that was never, ever going to happen. So we had to go and buy someone. And it was quite exciting. And they did do something. So which, I think they should get the credit they deserve.
Which again, you know, I suppose my point is the... See the way we brought in Edward, where we had him on loan for, you know, he's a PSG prospect that we can get, but because he's a PSG prospect, we've not had enough game time to make sure that he's worth the money that they're asking for him.
Yeah.
So we get him in on loan with an option to buy. Same possibly with Arzani, who he might be a star next season. You know, I'm not saying he is, yeah. I'm just saying you've then got a year to judge that player to then be able to say, right, here's... There is merit for me in that way of bringing somebody in, loan with an option to buy. But just bringing in a loan player who can he make it at his parent club is of no value to us. And hopefully that will change. And again, you don't know, you know, and maybe I would actually like maybe the club to be a bit more explicit and say, and this might actually be a bit of a get out for. Whenever we don't, you know, the only problem with winning a treble is the first season we don't win a treble, you know, in the eyes of some supporters will be a failure. So it might be worthwhile when Lennon is formally unveiled, if the club were to say something like, right, we get a new man, and this is what I was wanting, a new strategy, a new system. Our priorities moving forward are to keep winning the league and to be more successful in Europe. And in order to do that, we are going to play our young players at every opportunity. So that the fans know that in Neil Lennon's first game, for argument's sake, in the League Cup, when we play six young players, it's because we're giving them game time. And when we get knocked out of the League Cup, it's because this is all part of a plan for us to be... This is how we see ourselves achieving... last 16 Champions League qualification within the next 5 years. We're going to have to get our youth. Right, so part of my meditation about Neil Lennon is, for me, for us to do that, we need a major transformation in the whole structure of our club. And Neil Lennon signals we're not doing that. Neil Lennon's appointment and, by the sounds of things, John Park's reappointment as the head of scouting illustrates to me more of a comfort blanket attitude of what the club are doing next. That's part of my issue. And again, the big thing for me is the club allowed Neil Lennon to leave 5 years ago. We didn't stop him leaving. You know, we didn't go to him and give him a bumper contract to get him to stay. When he left, it was mutual that he was fed up with us and we were fed up with him. Right, so 5 years ago we decided he was not quite good enough to be Celtic manager as a club. His CV since then does not justify him even getting an interview for the Celtic job. That's my issue. He failed at Bolton, granted Bolton had special circumstances, and he left Hibs under a cloud with Hibs in 8th place. After he left, Hibs improved and went up to 5th. There is nothing on his CV after his departure to then make him the standout candidate. And the thing for me about Peter Lawwell's style, the way he's been appointed, and Peter Lawwell's comments about Neil Lennon was the best candidate, is what Peter Lawwell's told us. Peter Lawwell's also told us that Celtic didn't speak to anybody else. Peter Lawwell's also told us that people apply for the job, but their applications went unopened and are sitting in a drawer. Well, of course, Neil Lennon is the best candidate because, according to Peter Lawwell, he's the only candidate.
The only one. To anyone else.
And then he also has told us that the decision to appoint Neil Lennon was not determined by whether he won a cup. He would have been appointed whether we'd lost the cup final or won the cup final.
Conor, find Peter. That It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Well, see, if that's the case, why not appoint Neil Lennon last week? Trophy day, appoint Neil Lennon, lifts the pressure off Neil Lennon. Also lets the players know, see the guy who's picking you for Saturday? He's going to be your boss next season as well. So if you're thinking of just ignoring him because you don't know if he's going to be around, he's around. But why not do that? Why appoint him in the showers half an hour after the final whistle? Makes no sense.
Trying to put a positive spin on it, I'll probably end up coming back to a negative spin. And with Park's mention, the players that played during Lennon's time, a lot of them I'm really happy with. You know, Ledley came and did well. Mm-hmm. Ki-Sun Yong played well. I know he didn't buy him, I don't think.
No, he did. But Ki-Sun Yong, Park picked him anyway,
Park picked him, but Lennon didn't, right. So Ki-Sun Yong was a great player. Wanyama was a great player. Van Dijk was a great player. Forster was a great player. Hooper was a great player. Stokes, I think, was a very good player and an intelligent purchase at the time.
Griffiths.
Griffiths, a great player. But then I'm more scared of the players that he didn't sign that he wanted to. Stuff like, you know, the fact that had Lennon got his way, David James would have signed for Celtic. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Boulard would have signed for Celtic. And that signals to me that he's one of these guys that's... And the fact that he left us and thought he was going to go off and get the Blackburn or the Everton or the Sunderland job, you know, he's clearly got one eye on the Premier League. I think he's been utterly humbled since he left us and probably isn't looking south anymore. But there's that obsession or passion for the English league, which will... You know, the reality is, can we honestly believe that Ledley or Hooper won't pitch up next week? I mean, I loved Gary Hooper, but it wouldn't be a step forward to sign Joe Ledley or Gary Hooper next week.
I mean, again, moving away from Lennon, just in general about the club, we need to stop looking in England. We need to stop looking for
players. Give up on it. Forget it's there.
Yeah. We need to stop taking players on loan. We need to stop looking in England at players because they don't offer value for money. And if we're going to do that, I think a lot of the supporters are agitated because we had a superstar manager in Brendan Rodgers. And they saw that as the club had moved up a level in terms of ambition. And they were looking for a similar quality ambition. Now, a lot of people had an unrealistic expectation of what we could achieve. Rafa Benitez is on £6 million a year at Newcastle and wants a pay rise. And I understand he has a £10 million offer to go to China, which he doesn't particularly want to do, but we're not in that bracket. AVB, the other fans were talking about, is about to take the Marseille job for £7 million a year. We're not in that bracket. And I think sometimes people need to be... So I think part of the problem is we had fans with an unrealistic expectation and we've gone... It's not just that we've not gone quite to that level of expectation, we've gone well below it. For me personally, I remember having a real issue with a guy after the Morton game in the League Cup, and I know it was the League Cup and what I've just said about playing youngsters or whatever, but the League Cup game and the Barcelona game, a guy having a go at me because I criticised, and he said, well, you wouldn't be saying those things when you beat Barcelona. No. But in terms of differential of league position, the defeat to Morton was the worst defeat in our history. And the defeat to Morton and the victory over Barcelona also summed up to me something about Neil Lennon as manager that maybe I've been spoilt by Brendan Rodgers in particular, but see if Neil Lennon got the setup of the team right, Barcelona could happen. See, before the game, got the team right. See if Neil Lennon for the start of the game got the setup of the team wrong. Morton happened. Aberdeen happened. My issue with Neil Lennon is he didn't seem capable of changing a... When he got the setup wrong in a game, he didn't seem capable of then changing the setup to get it right midway through the game in the way that Brendan Rodgers can. And obviously not all coaches can. And that's what that separates the wheat from the chaff. But that's what I'm looking for a Celtic manager. So if I know that's his fault now... So my issues with him last time was, if he got the setup wrong, it was wrong for the whole game. My perception watching the team was that the players, certainly by the time he left, and this was a, you know, if you remember Ronnie Dyla making this point, and people will have issues about what Ronnie Dyla did in terms of players' diets, whatever. But my perception was the players were unfit under Lennon, particularly in the final season that you talked about. So my issues about Lennon were, I knew too many people who were around and aware of Lennon, so I'm a bit more puritanical about professional athletes being on the bevy. I've said on this podcast many times before, I think it's a fair exchange to say to a young man, I'm going to pay you £1 million plus a year. And as a consequence, see for the next 7-8 years when you become a millionaire, the only downside of that is you can't eat shite and you can't drink alcohol. I think that's a fair trade-off, that Olympians don't earn as much money and are prepared to do that trade-off. So I think it's fair to say to someone, see for the 5 years that I'm paying you £1 million, £2 million a year, you don't bevy and don't eat shite. And I hear from too many people that he allowed the players to bevy, allowed the players to eat shite because he was bevying too much regularly.
I agree with you entirely on that. And the thing is, the rumours that you hear are no longer rumours, thanks to the Simon Ferry podcast or the Simon Ferry YouTube videos. This is out there now. Everyone knows what it was like. No, it was a party to be had.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to be proud of.
So what's the criteria? You know, so again, you're looking at, right, okay, you don't know whether, you know, he might argue, look, I learned from that. I was still young. I'd not long moved from the transition from being a player to the manager. And so I found it more difficult to pull up the senior players, right? And maybe he's improved on that. But there's nothing on his football CV that says he has. That's my issue. There's no evidence to me, that says that's the case. If I'm looking to recruit a Celtic manager, I'm wanting someone who what will allow us to punch above our weight? What will allow us to achieve in European football what our European peers are achieving? What will allow us to do that? And it's the benefits. It's the British cycling. It's the Dave Brailsford, you know, marginal improvements thing.
Yeah.
And so if we can't pay for the elite players, how do we make our players better? How do we make our young players better so that the young player, well, we give them game time, we give them access to the very, very best sports science information that we can afford. We invest as heavily as we can in Y Scout and all the various... You know, getting back to your point earlier about tactics, and football's a simple game, but there is science information that you can then use to enhance it. So you make sure that you've got the very best information in terms of sports science to give the players the optimum balance between rest and work. You give the players the optimum information about their diet. And you have the optimum information you can achieve about tactics of the opponents, that you have the maximum number of coaches that you can afford to analyse your opponents to the nth degree, to get your tactics right, to get your sports science right, and to get your fitness right, and to get your diet right. So for me, I'm looking then for a first team coach who buys into all of that, because that's how we'll get our marginal gains.
Yeah. And that's why I'm not wanting us to go out and buy like wacky foreigners. I'm really not. I'd promote from within. I genuinely would go and buy the best five players in the SPFL, or guys that I think would fit into our team, which we might do, I don't know. That's what I'd do, and I'd hope the coach could get the best out of... I mean, that's... I completely disagree with what Lowell said last night. Or Lowell said something about we don't need major surgery. We absolutely do. You know, if we eliminate the fat from the squad, then we are down to a pretty small squad because there's a lot of, you know, weaker players, hangers on, just non-contributors. So when we get rid of them, you know, promote from within, buy a couple of players from the SPFL. I would happily do that. The better ones, the ones that I think look like good footballers. And then maybe spend big in one or two positions. They buy a good centre half or something like that. But I mean, I've drawn up an entire squad of what I think I'd happily go into next season and be confident of winning nine in a row with, which is not beyond the realms of reality. It does mean getting a lot of crap off the wage bill, though. And maybe Lennon will do that. Maybe Lennon will come in and do everything we need him to do, everything we want him to do. Because the high points of Lennon's reign first time were brilliant. And I'm not talking about the Barcelona game or whatever. Even domestically, you know, we had some brilliant away wins at Hearts, some brilliant away wins at Hibs. We scalped the Huns a couple of times. You know, there was high points, and I hope that comes back. But I don't think it'll be interesting how it unfolds. I mean, obviously, we hope he does well.
Yeah, getting back to my point, of course I want Neil Lennon to do well. You know, anybody listening to this who thinks, of course I want him to do well, because he's now the Celtic manager. So I want us to win 10 in a row, and I want us to qualify for the Champions League, and I want us to play the last 16 Champions League football, and I want us within 5 years to be playing the last 8 Champions League football, and I genuinely don't think that's beyond... My concern actually is that the people running the club have a lower expectation of the potential ability of our club than I do. That's my concern.
Yeah.
That this appointment of Lennon and Park symbolises that, because they are the square root of their ambition is to win 10 in a row. That's it. Whereas my ambition is to play European football on an elite level, and by default you would win 10 in a row. Just yeah. by having that, the amount of money you would get from that. It's a lot of this will come down for me as to how we recruit from this point on.
And team selection, just who's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one of my favourite words that you use. Is it Espanolification?
Yes,
that's one of my favourite words. But I've got one of my own. It's the Zorkification, and it applies to Scott Brown. I don't know if you remember Michael Zorc. Michael Zorc was the great Borussia Dortmund midfielder.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, he's a legend. He's still a legend. He's like their director of football or whatever.
Yeah.
But as when we played Dortmund in, was it 91 or 92,
mm-hmm.
he was probably at the peak of his powers. But as the years went by, as Matthias Sammer came back from Italy, as Andy Muller came back from Italy, as Paulo Sousa came in from Juventus, as Paul Lambert came from Motherwell, you know, all the greats, Michael Zorc's place in the team became less important. And, you know, it got to the point that when Borussia finally won the European Cup and a bunch of trophies in the late 90s, Michael Zorc was very much the, right, throw him on for the last 10 minutes so he gets a sweat on. So when he lifts the cup, it looks like he was involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Scott Brown's been absolutely brilliant. But the high point of this season, the just gone, as well as Scotland played, particularly after Christmas, the high point of the season was the 6 weeks when he wasn't in the team. You know, Christie I don't even know who played next to Christie, to be honest. Christie McGregor, was Ncham still playing at that time?
I think Ncham's been injured a lot this season in the team.
So who was in the team with McGregor and Christie at that point? Who was the third midfielder?
I can't think. It must have been Ncham.
Must have been. Because when we beat Rangers, Ncham was the best player in the park.
Yeah.
The 1-0 game. So around that period and for the next 6 weeks or whatever. And I think that long term, as much as I love Brown, appreciate Brown, we need to have that in mind. That his position in the team shouldn't be guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the captain. And he is the beating heart of the club. I get that. But going forward, it's not going to be forever. You know, I remember arguing with people. I think some people argue that the end of Lambert's career was when we played Blackburn. You know, remember Blackburn mm-hmm. gave us the runaround at Celtic yeah. Park, but then we still pumped them over two legs. And I refused to accept it at the time that Lambert, you know, that was the end of Lambert, because I loved Paul Lambert. But ultimately, maybe it was, you know, it was the moment, it was all right, you know, he's not going to get any better at this age.
Mm-hmm.
That's just basic, you know, that's just logical. So Brown has peaked. Brown's player of the year last year was phenomenal. I was so pleased that he did that. But Brown will decline.
Oh, absolutely. Of course he's going to decline.
You know? And we should preempt that. We should be planning for that.
Mm-hmm.
And he should not be guaranteed selection. But there's no way he's going to get phased out, which is basically what it would be. There's no way that's going to happen under Lennon.
And I think a lot of people, there are the consensus style of football we're going to play under Lennon. And I think that a lot of that has been determined by people watching the team in the last 11 games. 11, 12 games, whatever it is, that he's been in charge. And again, that's my concern. I do understand. I do have sympathy with the argument that he's put forward, that other people who support Lennon have put to me, of it's not his players, it's not his team, and it's been difficult for him because he didn't want to come in and start completely changing the way the team played, because he just needed to get them over the line to win the treble. So I have a bit of sympathy with that. He didn't feel he could change it that much. And that's the argument for why he's played Hayes, because he doesn't like Sinclair getting to the level of the penalty box and cutting inside. He likes his wingers to get to the byline. And that's why he's been playing Hayes, because he's the only left-footed wide player that he could play. We'll just need to see. The key to it's going to be, I mean, I just find the appointment of Lennon odd. The only thing I can think of is that I understand Peter Lawwell was 60 today. So it could well be that they needed to get, or 60, yes, they wanted to, could well be they needed to get things organised, they needed to get word out there, because actually Peter, I don't know, I mean, I don't know whether he's in work or not in work, but based on the fact that I've found out that he was 60 today, could well be that Peter Lawwell's off for the next week. Are we celebrating his 60th birthday somewhere? And he just simply needed to get this announced so that maybe he's going to be off and then Lennon's off. You know, simple logistics.
He's in Marbella, isn't he?
Yeah, simple human logistics of making sure people know about it, and then the agents can deal with it in the meantime. We are now, what, 6 weeks away from the Champions League qualifier? So I understand the point. We at least need to sign three or four players before this. We should be able to get through the first round with Johnny Hayes at left back if Kieran Tierney's going to be injured. But really, it's not a solution playing Johnny Hayes at left back.
Yeah, we shouldn't be going to our summer camp. You know, they play in Vienna on the 29th of June. I'll go through for that. But, you know, your squad should be in place there.
Yeah.
You know, it was. I remember 2 years ago going to see Celtic just outside Vienna, and yeah, well, Hayes had arrived. Who else was there? Dembele was there. Dembele had signed the previous year now, but I'm trying to think, was Edouard there? No, Edouard wouldn't have been there. Anyway.
I suppose we've got the American left-back young guy.
That's interesting, yeah. I hadn't even factored those two Americans in my
future squad. Yeah, so the two Americans we've got Schwed. Arzani's going to be fit again this coming season.
Bayou.
I mean, there is an argument of, you know, Peter Lawwell's you don't need a major overhaul to the squad argument would be, right, okay, so six or seven are going to go. But in terms of players who played last season, we've already got the two Americans, Schwed, Arzani, Bayou. There's five players already. So
yeah.
If we then go and sign a right back, probably sell one, or maybe even both from what we're hearing, but certainly one of Incham and Rogic. Incham has not looked interested. Incham this season has reminded me of Dembele last season, which is, you got the impression that I don't think you're as injured as much as you seem to be injured.
Yeah.
You've just decided, look, I've had my time here. I think Incham, we had a Porto were talking to us for £15 million for Incham last summer. I think Incham wants to go. So we'll sell Incham. Christie will be back. Hopefully we'll sign. We need to sign. I suppose we've got Bayou. But I'm not sure if Griffiths is ever going to be back. So if Griffiths is never going to be back, we need to sign another striker.
You play Aitchison. Aitchison should be our fourth striker.
No, he shouldn't. He couldn't get a game for Dumbarton on loan.
Then why is he even there? Why is he still attached to us?
I don't know. Based on what, if he can't get a game for Dumbarton when he goes out on loan and they send him back.
But then, Lindsay, is it? No, Findlay. Who's the boy at Kilmarnock? Findlay. He was a Celtic youth player. Went to Dumbarton on loan. Went to Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
Come back, Kilmarnock. I'd buy him in a heartbeat.
We've got Okoflex. Up front.
Is he a striker? I thought he was a winger.
Well, you know what it's like. You can never really work out. Sometimes we decide that we're just going to play someone out as a winger. But yeah. Anyway, he's an attacking option.
Yeah.
But I think if we want to play, the point I'm making is, actually, it's only as I'm talking to you, because I agreed with you at the beginning of the podcast about we do need the same player, but as I'm then thinking about it, we actually do have four or five players that are coming in to the squad. There's players going out, there's four or five coming in. So I say if we then go and sign just another three or four, there's seven players.
You need to go and buy a good centre-half, though. Yeah. I like Ayer. I'm willing to give Samunovic another chance. He's still young. You know, Samunovic on a good day is a capable player.
Again, I put my cards on the table that I'd rather Lennon hadn't been appointed. But there is an argument that Samunovic is his best 11 games of the season have been the 11 his best 11 games of the last two seasons have been under Neil Lennon.
Yeah. So, yeah, you stick with Samunovic. I like Ayer, but you still need two more.
Mm-hmm.
So who are your two other centre-halves?
Jack Hendry.
He's one of the flush. Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah.
You have to just say, a strange one would be Kouassi. He's got to be on the goal list. He's never going to do anything, is he? He's not going to turn into Wanyama overnight.
Well, the counter-argument would be there are players that we would have had out the door under Ronnie Dyla. Callum McGregor. Lots of people wanted rid of Callum McGregor. Brendan Rodgers comes in and he transforms that player.
Yeah.
There's always a possibility that actually, slightly different style of football, Neil Lennon's the perfect manager for Kouassi.
I'm trying to think back to Lennon's team. He didn't play Ki Sun Yong every week. you know, you played his share. He definitely was involved.
For me, I actually didn't play Ki-Sung Young enough.
Yeah, I liked Ki-Sung Young. But then Beaton. I like Beaton. So Beaton would be my Ki-Sung Young in a, you know, a modern variation of what his team was.
Mm-hmm.
I'd keep Beaton around. I think reluctantly, but progressively, you let Rogic go.
Yeah.
I love Tommy Rogic. I'd watch Tommy Rogic kick a can eye and brew around a gym hall, but you can't justify high wages for a guy that doesn't turn up. Yeah. Breaks my heart, but no. Rogic goes, Cham goes to generate some money. And that's two relatively high wages.
Although he signed a new contract, I just can't see. Scott Sinclair has not looked like Lennon's type of player.
Not at all.
He played Mikey Johnson and Johnny Hayes ahead of him. And he's on 30 grand a week. Have we stuck him on a new contract just so that if we sell him to an English Championship team, we get a couple of ball for him? A
couple of million. I'd take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anyone from the SPFL you'd buy?
No. Part of the problem is when I watch Celtic games, I'm only watching Celtic, so I'm not really watching the opposition.
Right.
And then I very occasionally will watch a Rangers versus somebody game. And the thing that always strikes me when I watch the bit like you're talking about Aberdeen, supporting Aberdeen when they were playing Rangers. The thing that always strikes me is these players have got technical ability. That's why they're playing at that level. It's decision-making. The thing that gets me every time I watch them is the decision-making. But I do not watch enough. Like people are going on about Turnbull at Motherwell. I don't watch enough to be able to say, you know, sports and highlights come on. I just watch the Celtic ones and then put it off. I don't watch enough of the other teams to be able to say who I would or wouldn't get in.
One that I think might not be impossible would be Malin at Hibs. The first thing a footballer should be able to do is kick a ball. I always loved David Beckham because he was quite good at kicking the ball. Not the fastest, not the smartest, but he was bloody good at kicking a football. That would be my priority for a footballer. And Stevie Malin and Lennon's on record gushing about how good a kicker of the ball Stevie Malin is.
Do you know what would be good? If we could get someone who could take corner kicks.
I'm all about in-swinging corner kicks. I think Griffiths and McGregor are all right on the right, but we'd need a right footer on the left, which we don't have.
Yeah. Someone who could take corner kicks, and maybe it's just the way we played under Brendan Rodgers, but we never seem to get that many free kicks at the edge of the box. I mean, that's why I always loved Maloney, because Maloney got you free kicks at the edge of the box.
Yeah.
Because of the way he played, his fast feet and his cutting inside. So Griffiths seems to be only once in a blue moon he scores a free kick for us. He scores in for Scotland all the time. but to be honest, I just don't see Griffiths coming ever playing for Celtic again.
It was in the middle of the season there where I fired a message to my pals just saying, wait a minute, is Griffiths never going to have another 30 goal season at Celtic? Do you know what I mean? It's just that the realisation that a guy that I loved, you know, a guy who had just through, you know, his goals record, you know, had crept above the legends of my youth. You know, when you finally say, all right, Griffiths is better than George Cadet. I don't know how true that is. But in terms of goals, you'll have to say, oh, yeah, he is. He's better than a legend. And then you realise, all right, is he finished? I can't let myself, I can't give up on Griffiths yet. Griffiths is a great footballer.
I'm not sure he'll be. See, if he is fantastic, I'm just not sure he will be.
What you would need is a disciplined manager who's going to come in and say, right, no booze.
No gambling, no booze.
Yeah. That's 24/7 professional.
Yeah, 24/7 elite athlete. Okay, so are you going to give Neil Lennon your wholehearted support?
Absolutely, of course. We'll see what the squad's like when they, you know, if they turn up in Vienna in what, 4 weeks' time with Lustig there. I might Monica Seles him or something, you know, do what needs done. But then I could pivot to my new club. This is quite a funny story, actually. I went the other night to see Slovan Bratislava. Now, since I've lived out here, the level is garbage. You know, that's why I'm not clinging on to Bayou as being the next big thing, because the Slovak League is garbage. But Slovan have just built a beautiful brand new stadium. I'm told it's all built by mafia money, but hey ho. Beautiful stadium. And I went, they just won the title. I wasn't actually going to go at the game, but someone told me it was Robert Vitek's farewell match. And Robert Vitek is like their Scott Brown, who happened to play very well for Celtic in a champ manager game I had about 18 years ago. So I had a soft spot for Robert Vitek. So when I was told it was his farewell match, I thought, oh, that's quite funny. I'll go and see that. So I went to see it on Friday night, and they won the title. But the funniest thing was that the cool thing was they have a controlled pitch invasion. So you know how we've got the little stage where the Celtic players get the trophy and all that? Basically, security run out and make like a box around that, and then all the fans just pour onto the park, and you're really close to the trophy getting lifted.
Right.
You know, it's a sort of controlled pitch invasion. At first I thought, oh, it's all kicking off, and then you realise, oh no, this is, they're completely,
they know
this is sanctioned. This is what they do. It was really, really cool. So yeah, got right up close and all that. But the funny thing, the reason I mention this is that, remember Ibrahim Rabiu, the wee Nigerian that we bought?
Yes.
Who, his real legacy at Celtic is, I think, when we won the league at Kilmarnock.
Yes.
He's in all the pictures celebrating, like, front and centre. Like I was involved, which he wasn't. But, yeah, that was quite funny that he did that. Who should pop up in the Slovan Bratislava celebrations?
Right.
But Ibrahim Rabiu doing his thing, you know, balls of champagne. It's like, this is clearly what he does. Which is just a funny twist.
He wasn't stripped or anything.
Wasn't stripped, and I've looked him up. Basically what happened was he washed up in Slovakia at a team called Trenčín. Actually won two titles and got a move to Belgium. But as he went to Belgium, to Ghent, or whatever they're called, the manager that won those two titles then got the Slovan job.
Right.
So he's like the Klopp of Slovak football, I guess. And then once he started building his Slovan team, he brought Ibrahim Rabiu back from Belgium because he wasn't making it there. So he's now at Slovan. But I don't think he played much.
Right.
But he has basically won three Slovak titles.
So the most important thing then is if Neil Lennon fails, not to go and get that manager, because he'll bring him over.
Yeah. Although he has a guaranteed success, evidently. He wins titles everywhere he goes.
Everywhere he goes.
So yeah, if it all goes tits up, I'll become a Slovan fan. Until then, I'll be tuning in to watch Tom Boyd
shout penalty,
yell at referees.
I'm trying to think of a way of finishing the podcast on a more upbeat note. I suppose the only thing to do would be to say, you know, to reflect upon the fact that once again, you know, do we want a treble? We've won 9 trophies in a row.
I was pleased to see Dembele come back. The celebrations. Yes. I was surprised how happy I was about that. Because I was very much a... I always felt that Dembele couldn't wait to leave. And he was always trying to work his ticket. and he left when he left. But just a couple of weeks ago, there was a video must have popped up on YouTube. It was all Dembele's goals, and I watched it back. And he did miss a lot of games and stuff, but he also did score a lot of great goals. And that rekindled my love for him. And then the fact that he popped up at Celtic Park last week, I thought was really funny. And even today, he's posting pictures with Harry Hood. And it's like, all right, we get charmed and hypnotized by a lot of phonies. And I'm not believing for one second that, he's that engaged in it. Mm-hmm. But fair play to him. He is there and he is posting these things. So that's a nice thing,
Right, well, that's as much as an upbeat. Thanks, John. And obviously, Anthony Money, thanks very much.
Right, hail, hail.
Hail.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast. It was a difficult one to do specifically in relation to the chat about the manager, because obviously Neil Lennon has had achievement at Celtic. He's got a 71% win rate as Celtic manager and has been a fantastic servant to the club. And to step in when he did, when Brendan Rodgers walked out, was something that was sorely needed by the club. And I think he was the right candidate at that point. I'm just not convinced he's the right candidate going forward as the permanent manager for the club. And my concerns about us following on the footsteps of someone like Kilmarnock when they appoint someone like Gary Locke. However, it is what it is. He's now the Celtic manager. So let's hope he's success. Anyway, that's enough for me. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Anthony Murray. And we will no doubt have a season-ending podcast soon.
There should be more happiness, so much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring